v. Long, Mr. McShane.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the Court. Counsel, I'm Kevin McShane of Indianapolis, Indiana. I represent the appellant, Jason Edwards, in this case. Mr. Edwards raises a sole issue in the direct appeal of his conviction. That is Judge McKinney's denial of his motion to suppress evidence based on his allegation that the necessity provision of Title III.
Did you raise in the district court the issue of whether there were sufficient facts to support the court's finding of necessity for the wiretap? The government says, you know, the government says that you didn't, and that the standard of review should be plain error, and you are contending that the standard is abuse of discretion. So where in the record did you preserve this?
I disagree with Mr. Vaughn's contention in his brief. It is raised in the record. It was raised perhaps not as succinctly in the motion, but certainly raised during the hearing that we had with Judge McKinney, and he rested his decision based on that argument. And I have noticed Mr. Vaughn did make that claim in his brief. I disagree with that. I think we've preserved the record at every step of the way here, including numerous objections during trial in this case. And obviously, that would be an issue for the court to decide. But I think if the court takes a look at the hearing, which was actually a hearing on the four corners of the affidavit, there were no further witnesses involved. But Judge McKinney gave his argument on that, and he based his decision on his finding that the necessity provision of Title III had, in fact, been fulfilled, which was a response to my argument, same argument we're making here today, that it wasn't.
And even if the court erred, you know, in issuing the wiretap on Edwards' phone, I'm not suggesting there was any error, okay?
I understand.
It seems to me that any error would be harmless. I mean, you seem to almost concede that the government already had enough evidence to convict Edwards, and that is why they didn't need the wiretap. So, I mean, how are you going to get around a harmless error?
Well, and I anticipated the question you're now asking in the way we structured our brief in this case. I listed and summarized all 43 of the telephone conversations pertaining to Mr. Edwards' phone that were admitted into evidence over our objection. They cover at least two of the substantive counts, almost entirely, that he was convicted of.
But, the government, you know, submitted this lengthy, detailed affidavit which described every traditional investigative method that had been tried and the limits of those methods in determining that, in determining the full extent of his participation, as well as determining the extent of the corruption in that police department. Boy, you've got a hard road.
Well, Your Honor, the issue of corruption is certainly unavoidable in this case. All three of the original co-defendants were all policemen. However, I respectfully submit, just because my client was a narcotics officer does not diminish his right to privacy. And I think that's what's really at the bottom of this. And what level of scrutiny is this court going to give individual affidavits pertaining to individual defendants and individual phone numbers? We know some of us have more than one phone. Mr. Long, the co-defendant, had two that the Title III's issued on. And again, and going back to your question about harmless error, I don't think this court could say, in particular, because there's a broad count one conspiracy count here. And considering that all of the defendants who went to trial in this case were found not guilty of some counts. So the jury was paying attention to this case, I think you could infer from the verdicts, and were willing to put the government to its proof. And they did. We did not contest the sufficiency of the drug convictions in this case. But if you take those 43 phone calls out that wouldn't have come in if Judge McKinney would have granted our motion, I don't think this court would be comfortable in saying that those the convictions would have stood without that evidence in the case.
Okay.
That's why we listed them all for you in our brief, so it would be convenient to view it and then consider it without that evidence. Now, also addressing the question you asked Judge Rovner, if the logic that I hear behind your question was extended, then the law, I think, would be if the government had evidence without the wiretaps, then they can go ahead and get whatever unlawful order that they want based on the standard of review with no
consequence. That's the doctrine of harmless error, right?
It is, Judge.
Well, what do you want? Do you want us to abolish it?
Absolutely not.
Well, you do, obviously.
Absolutely
not. I know
not.
What you're saying.
I've lived with that rule for 30
years.
Then
what are you talking about?
What I'm talking about is this.
Obviously, if the government has sufficient evidence to convict, has a lot of evidence, so no reasonable jury would acquit, then sure, they can go and add illegal evidence, and there's nothing you can do about it, right?
The point I'm making is if this were solely viewed by the court as a harmless error case, then I think the precedent that's being set is this. The government can go get
Of course, don't you understand? That's precisely what harmless error means.
Well, but I think it might be fair to say what kind of harmless error case are you talking about? If I view this as differently than a ruling on, for example, a 404
B. It's the same thing. If 404B evidence is erroneously admitted because it doesn't fit 404B. Nevertheless, the appellate court does a harmless error analysis, and it may be that even though there was illegal evidence, the conviction stands. That's what harmless error does.
The difference I see is this. This has to do with a privacy interest where there is an extremely detailed statutory procedure
that
the government's directed to follow.
Is applied in constitutional cases, right?
It is applied in constitutional cases and non-constitutional cases.
Right. Both. So the fact that this is privacy and might have constitutional overtones, why would that make a difference? That might require more demonstration of harmlessness, but there's still a harmless error doctrine.
The difference is then there's never a decision telling the government they can't do this.
The problem of harmless error in general. Right?
I see it as a specific problem in some cases, Your Honor, not just a general one. I understand what you're saying here. I disagree with your analysis of it. If I might move on.
Sure.
With respect to the sufficiency of the affidavit itself, the substantive issue in this case, there's a peculiar chronology here that results in the application for the wiretap intercept in Mr. Edwards' case to be full of contradictions. All of the traditional investigative techniques that the government tried in this case worked. The case started out with two informants.
No, but they explained the limits of those methods.
Well, they
in determining his full participation.
I don't think they explained it. They just asserted it.
Well, you know something, I have got to tell you, I have rarely seen, you know, I was a trial judge for 8 years. That was a very detailed affidavit.
It was very
that
detailed.
That was one well-done affidavit. I'm so sorry, but it was.
That's Your Honor, I hear what you're saying. But I think if the court took a real close look at this and see what actually happened, the detail doesn't outweigh the necessary scrutiny to see if they fulfill their statutory requirement here of a true showing of necessity.
Well,
and
did.
I understand they don't have to show much based on the Zambrano case. And I understand it's a practical, common sense standard here that the court has to apply based on the Sabalas case and the Adams case and some other cases here. But it certainly can't be no standard at all.
Is that what you're saying?
Well,
you aren't. You would not come into this court and say that.
I'm just saying this. Practical and common sense standard is very subjective.
Can you be concrete? What is missing here?
Well, it's more what's not so much what's missing. It's what they said that they'd accomplished with the with reasonable application of normal investigatory techniques. Their surveillance and their informants got them to the point of the first wiretap.
So you're saying they had 20, so they didn't need any more.
Yes. Now, under Zambrano, I am saying that, and I think I argued those exact words to Judge McKinney, Your Honor, when we litigated this.
That sets you up for the harmless error, right?
It does set us up for the harmless error. That's why I'm doing my best to try to make a distinction about different types of harmless error.
That's what you're trying to do.
But the traditional techniques all worked in this case. There's no allegation from the testifying agent that they tried one of them, it didn't work, and he describes the ones that did work.
But
they'd all work.
They wanted more.
Well, they're not entitled.
And yes, they are.
I don't believe.
They're entitled to find out all of the corruption that's going on in that miserable department.
And up until the point of the first application against Mr. Long, and then the second application against my client, they'd been moving full speed ahead, accomplishing exactly what you think needed to be done with, quote, that department in this case. There's
the whole department is up, but I mean those miserable people within that department.
Yeah, yes, ma'am, I understand. But still, the law should be followed here, especially when there's a privacy interest. I mean, whatever one might think about the evidence in this case against my client, what his occupation was. You know, he has a right to privacy on his phone until the government makes a sufficient showing. And if he doesn't have it, I don't have it. These kids sitting back here watching this don't have it. It's
those
important.
Those kids, with God's help, are not going to be corrupt police officers.
I certainly.
Then spend the rest of their lives in jail.
Well,
kids? Do you hear?
Yeah. I hope that, too. And I also hope that if any one of those kids were ever subject to a wiretap application invading their privacy by a judicial order, that the judge had given the proper scrutiny to that before it happened.
Thank you.
Is that it?
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, unless you have other questions, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Vaughan?
Good morning. My name is Joe Vaughan. I'm an assistant United States attorney, and I was co-counsel on the case below that has brought us here today.
So did the government have enough evidence to convict Edwards, even if we eliminate evidence that came from the wiretap of his cell phone?
Yes, Edwards could have been convicted of there would have been a smaller drug conspiracy, and as the defense argued, before Judge McKinney at the motion to suppress, there was already evidence of the ripoff of the undercover courier on March 19th. There was Long's tip-off of K. Beck Higgins on April 21st. You had Long and Edwards ripping off the FedEx parcel on April 25th. And then you had at the very end the discussions between Long and Edwards about contemplating stealing marijuana from the parcel that was going to be coming from Arizona. I'd like to address Judge Roldner's first question that dealt with what was the standard of review that applied here.
Yeah.
And I'd like to start out with, it's going to be docket entry number 169, which was the actual motion to suppress that was filed. It was 1.5 pages. It was filed 6 days prior to trial. And it reads as follows. The district court who issued the order lacked sufficient facts to conclude that normal investigative techniques had failed or were likely to fail or would be too dangerous to employ. That's it. There's no citation to the minimization statute. There's no argument. There's no meaningful discussion. When we then roll into the motion to suppress that Judge McKinney had, the tact of the defense became there was no reason for the government, the wiretap was not necessary, I'm sorry, because everything the government tried was successful. Judge McKinney obviously understood that was the argument because the judge phrased the issue when just before he ruled as the issue before the court was the wiretap necessary where normal investigative techniques had been successful. So the first argument that was made, which is the affidavit didn't provide sufficient facts, that was forfeit, that was abandoned, the plain error standard of review applies. On the claim that was made to the district court, which is, was the wiretap necessary, even though the government had had some success, that is going to be an abuse of discretion standard of review where there is going to be substantial deference which is accorded to the district court. One of the things that was laid out in the, I think it's a total of about 26 pages of necessity that was addressed in between the long affidavits for target phones 1 and 2 and in the Edwards application for target phone 3, it ran through a variety of normal investigative techniques which at the time of the application for the Edwards wiretap were simply not going to work or had worked with only limited success. I'd just like to talk about a few of those. It addressed the ongoing long wiretaps. Contrary to what was alleged in Mr. Edwards' brief, there were no interceptions on the long wiretap about the planning for the ripoff of the FedEx parcel on April 25th. There was no physical surveillance that took place in connection with that. But what we do have is after Long steals the parcel, makes a call to Edwards and says, I'm coming in hot, it's an emergency, do you have a saw? Just after Long arrives at Edwards' house, we have Edwards on target phone 3 calling Davis. We have Davis calling back to Edwards. We don't know what that conversation was. And at that time, all we knew about Davis was he was a patrol officer who had ripped off the undercover courier of about $10,000. We didn't know what his involvement was with stealing or trafficking in quantities of drugs. We also know that once Long and Edwards had the marijuana at Edwards' house and cut it in half with a saw, that they were looking for someone to dispose of the marijuana. We had Edwards makes a phone call to a telephone number of 317-654-3771. Well, in Mr. Edwards' brief, he says, well, the government had the subscriber information. How hard can that be? I think what the record shows is that subscriber information indicated it was for a person who lived in Minneapolis, Minnesota, but the zip code was for Indianapolis. The street address in Minneapolis that was listed did not exist. So the question becomes, who is this person who Edwards is talking to on target phone 3? We also know that Long was having conversations separately with Davis and with Edwards. But during those conversations, for example, with Edwards, Long is never saying, here's what my relationship is with Davis. And when Long is talking to Davis, he's not saying what my relationship is with Edwards, but we know that Edwards and Davis are conversing extensively over target phone 3. Once again, what is their relationship?
I think we've got your drift. I'm going to go into another area.
Yes, Your Honor.
As far as I can tell, the district court never formally adopted the calculations in the PSR. If we want to review the district court's findings on drug quantity for Long, well, of course, Long isn't here, but where in the record would we find them? And if you're relying solely on the PSR, where in the record did the court adopt the PSR?
I think where we would go is going to be to pages in the sentencing transcript. It's going to be a 26 and 27.
Okay.
Where we are at this phase in the sentencing proceeding is that We have the PSR who says we have a base offense level of 28. Long makes his objections to the PSR, but he only objects to the four-level adjustment for role and two levels for obstruction. Judge McKinney rules on those.
And, of course, his attorney, let me just think, his attorney never objected to the PSR calculations. There were two objections that were unrelated to the amount of marijuana, right?
You were exactly correct, Your Honor.
All right.
So what we have then is we have Judge McKinney who says, I determine based upon the offense level computation that we start with a base offense level of 28 for 928 pounds of marijuana. I add the adjustments that I think are appropriate, and I come up with the offense level of 36. Now, as the court is aware, the judge, let's say he hadn't presided over the trial. This was a plea of some type. And you have uncontested facts in a PSR that say these are all the amounts, and the PSR says the grand total is 928 pounds or 421 kilograms. Defense has no objection. Judge McKinney is a trial judge. Could have relied on those uncontested facts, and that would have been sufficient. But what Judge McKinney did, he presided over the trial, he heard the testimony, and he heard the evidence. He then reviewed those guideline computations, and he found, and he specifically stated, that Long intended to possess 421 kilograms of cocaine at the offense level of 28 was correct. So I think that's the finding. And that should be at pages 26 and 27 of the sentencing transcript on Mr. Long. I don't know, did that answer the court's question there?
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any, if there are no further questions from the court on this matter, I'd appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today, and the government would stand on and adopt the other arguments in its brief.
Okay, thank you, Mr. McShane. I mean, Mr. Fawn, I'm sorry. Mr. McShane, you...
Thank you.
Anything further?
Your Honor, just a couple of minor points. It'll take about a minute. And I don't want to quarrel with Mr. Vaught too much about what the record shows or what it doesn't.
Just tell us where to look.
But, yes, he indicated that there were no discussions between Mr. Edwards and Mr. Long about the FedEx ripoff. I think it's Exhibit 242T, which was from the first wiretap on Mr. Long's phone. And I'd invite you to take a look at that. I don't believe I ever raised minimization as one of our complaints here in this case. And we're not saying that here today. If there was some confusion about that, I heard him mention it. Other than that, I have nothing to add to our argument or our brief. Thank you so much.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr.
McKinney. It's lucky to have you.
And thank you for, you were appointed, were you not? And we thank you for your efforts on behalf of the court.